Everyone considers certain things within the material world to be most dear to him, and because of attachment to such things, one eventually becomes miserable. One who understands this gives up material possessiveness and attachment, and thus achieves unlimited happiness. Responsively, please. The saintly Brahmana said, everyone considers certain things within the material world to most dear to him. And because of attachment to such things, one eventually becomes miserable. One who understands this gives up material possessiveness and detachment, and thus achieves unlimited happiness. So this is the last chapter in the instructions of the Avadhuta Brahmana, whereas we discovered last week it's actually Dattatreya. And it is interesting, as I mentioned, I was studying later on verses for this class, but it is interesting reading Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura's comments on verse number 9. And because in verse 9, the Brahmana, he's saying how he saw these things himself, it wasn't just hearsay. And then in Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura's commentary, he's saying that he's explaining that he saw these with his own eyes, and not that it's by omniscience. Yeah? So, you know, we could take this to understand this is also a hint that Dattatreya is saying that, yes, I am, you know, this is Dattatreya, and he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he does have this omniscient nature. Whereas in the commentary that's here, it puts a different angle of vision on it. But it's not to say that one's wrong and one's right, because we often see, if we read different acharyas' comments on a particular verse or a particular statement in Shastra, they'll all give different, not necessarily always, but they'll often give different comments which come from a completely different angle of vision. And the idea is not to see, well, this one's right and this one's wrong, but try to understand how these different statements are both correct. Because the acharyas, you know, they're correct in their statements, they're explaining things from a different point of view. Just like if we go back some years ago, there was discussion about the fall of the jiva. And some acharyas were saying this thing, some acharyas were saying another thing, and devotees were quoting all these different comments from the acharyas, and trying to establish one as being the absolute statement, and that we must follow this and all other statements are bogus. And actually some of the discussions were getting quite heated, and it even got to the point where, you know, there was Vaishnava Parada being committed. And we can understand when devotees take statements like this and they try to establish this as being the conclusive statement, there's no other correct statement. But this is generally the tendency of neophyte devotees, is they like to, you know, establish their perception is the conclusive perception. We see the acharyas do give different angles of vision, and that's exactly what it is. It's different angles of vision on the same thing. And an interesting example, because we see here this section, these three chapters in the Bhagavatam, we see how Krishna is giving these examples to Uddhava, showing how this Avadhuta Brahmana has taken things that he's seen in nature and learning from that. You know, just things he sees in everyday life. Like here in the next few verses, he's going to be talking about the Karara birds or hawks. Two verses he discusses that, and in the following verse, it's one verse about a lazy child. Then there's five or six verses about the girl with the bangles, the young girl with the bangles. Then three verses he talks about the arrow maker. So these are all just ordinary things in everyday life. So another example one could think of is I don't know if you've ever seen a Japanese rock garden. Anyone ever seen that?
Garden.
Huh? No, a rock garden. It's interesting the way it's set up. It's like no matter where you stand in the garden, you can't see all the rocks. So that from every angle of vision, it's going to look different. And that's the same with the material world. From every angle of vision, it looks different. You know, we look at, you know, if an attached person looks at the material world, he's going to see it in one way. If a lusty person looks at the material world, he'll see it another way. If a greedy person looks at the material world, and they see how he can enjoy this. And if a devotee of Krishna, an unknown devotee of Krishna, looks at the material world, he sees how can I engage this in Krishna's service. So, you know, as they say sometimes, what you see depends on where you stand. Or have you ever seen, sometimes those drawings, they're done very, you know, in a very clever way. That, like, you know, you get this drawing, and for some people it looks like a beautiful young girl, and for another person it looks like an old woman. It's very interesting, just the way the consciousness affects the person. So we see here that the acharyas are giving different explanations on a certain point. And in this section of the Bhagavatam, we see how this chapter is called detachment from all this material. So, Dattatreya is giving his conclusion here, or actually Krishna is giving his conclusion there, that progress in spiritual life is made by detachment from all this material. And we see in the Gita that Krishna, he points this out in the second chapter, in that verse, this one point determination, that this focus or this powerful determination is achieved by those who are resolute in purpose, and that those who are not irresolute are unsteady on the path. And we see that generally materialistic people, because of their attachments, their minds are literally all over the place. They're constantly looking. A materialistic person is constantly looking for how I can gratify my senses, constantly looking for, I want this, I want that. There's no end to the material desires. And actually Krishna also points it out in the Gita, in the third chapter, where he mentions that there's dushpalena malena child, there's lust. It is never satisfied, and it burns like fire. And anyone who's seen fire understands that it's got this insatiable need for fuel. And the more fuel that you put on the fire, the more it burns. And you just keep putting fuel on and on. And practically speaking, it's impossible to put on so much fuel that the fire can't. Just like there's the old saying, trying to put out a fire with gasoline. Very risky path. Just imagine you have a small fire and you pour a petrol tanker of gasoline on it. It's very risky. It could quite easily explode because of so much fuel. So material desires are like that. That no matter... And actually it's interesting because there's two paths given by Naramuni. There's the path of Pravritti and there's the path of Nivritti. So the path of Pravritti Marg is to satiate the senses by indulging in the objects of the senses, but Narada Muni points out this is a very risky path. And actually this path needs to be followed under the directions of the spiritual master. And he also points out about Nivritti, which is actually a safer path, because one is removing himself, or removing himself from the contact with the objects of the senses. And this is a safer path to follow. Although we do see that some yoga practitioners, or so-called yoga practitioners, are actually sense enjoyers, take this instruction from Narada Muni and think that this is the way they're going to achieve success. But because they're not following it under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master, then they become further implicated in the entanglement of the material world. They become actually... I have examples of people I've known who have followed various... so-called yogis like Rajneesh, for instance, and that's what he teaches, is he encourages his followers to, engage in sex life, intoxication, etc., etc., to the maximum. And what I have seen is from people who are engaged in this, they actually become further and further implicated, degraded by their indulgence in sexual activities, and actually, in the case of some of us, they actually go mad. Because of this incessant and unsatiated desire or attempts to try to satisfy their senses. And actually you see that when people are taking intoxication, they become mad. They become crazy. And especially like some of these hallucinogenics. It affects the mind to such an extent that and I'm sure we've all had experience of that. There's people who come to the temple that have taken hallucinogenics in the past and their minds are completely scrambled. They have just a different perception of reality from what most other people have. And that's largely due to the effect of things like Datura and LSD and things like this. That their perception of the relative world has become so affected that they can't function in the same way that other people do. So we see in this section here how, in this chapter, the detachment is given as the theme of the chapter. And then the Avadhut Brahmana is describing the remaining seven gurus. And actually he brings in one extra guru, his own body. So actually he brings the list to up to 25 rather than 24. And the first topic is he talks about the two Karara birds, actually the group of Karara birds. And they're all very hungry. And one Karara bird had some meat, so they decided they were going to kill this other Karara bird to get the meat, or the hawk. And this hawk let go of him, and then he became peaceful as soon as he let go of the meat. Because you can imagine, you have something desirable, and then people are trying to take that desirable thing from you. And different things happen. Is obviously, what do? It's mine, you can't have it. You hold on tighter. Yeah? You hold it even tighter. And because people are trying to take this desirable object from you, you become disturbed, you become agitated. Yeah? It's natural. I mean, you see with children. I mean, another example we can take, we see how children, most normal children, the way they interact with any particular desirable object. One child wants to say, I want that. And the other says, no, it's mine. And then what happens? A fight ensues, and misery. They cry. I'm sure most parents have had that experience. The children are fighting over something. It's always winds up in tears. But we see, sometimes we see a child who just say, okay, you can play with it. And there's no anxiety. So the same way we have these attachments. And we're going to lose all these material things. That's just the nature. Everything in this material world is temporary, as Krishna explains in the Gita. Dukkalaya Ashashvatam. He says Ashashvatam is temporary. It's bound to go because it's made of matter, it must decay. Everything in this material world goes through the basic steps. And dwindling and vanishing is the final product. It dwindles, it falls apart, and it vanishes. It doesn't matter what it is. Even big mountains dwindle. Even the planet itself eventually will dwindle and vanish. It may last for millions of years. Lord Brahma, his life is for many millions and millions of years, but eventually he dwindles and vanishes, the same as anything else in this material world. The only thing that doesn't dwindle is the soul. The only thing that doesn't vanish is the soul. Krishna again points this out in the second chapter of the Gita. So we see that with the birds, because the birds attach to enjoying this piece of meat, then he's fighting to keep it. And as long as he fights to keep it, he experiences anxiety. But as soon as he renounces, as soon as he lets go, then he feels peace. So this is a very valuable lesson for us. We see that, the fact of the matter is we have so many material attachments. If we think we don't have material attachments, then explain. Ask yourself, why am I here in this material world? Did you descend to serve Krishna? Did you send to propagate your Yuga Dharma? Not likely. We're here because of our material attachments. We're here because of our desires to try to enjoy the material world separate from Krishna. And so, understanding that, we need to identify what these desires are. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur discusses this. The Madhurya Kadambini is about identifying our various anarthas. And he goes through the whole, the stages of one's development on the path of anatta nivritti, or purifying ourselves of the various anattas or unwanted things that are there within the heart. So the idea is that through the practice of devotional service, one is able to identify what are the anattas, what are the things that are holding me here in this material world, and then how to let go. Because the basic premise that most people are functioning on, and it's probably the most difficult one to give up, is that I am this body. We're all functioning along this line. We're all thinking that I am this body. That I am this, I am that, I am vain, I am woman, I am old, I am young. Whatever it is. We're all functioning on this basic premise. So this is the prime anatta that we're all struggling with. And until we can overcome this anatta, then actually we won't be able to effectively bring about our realization, our God consciousness. To some degree will be there, and it's something that's growing and growing and growing. And it's not like, you know, one day I just give this up and then the next day I become God conscious. It's a gradual evolution. Anatta Nivritti is like that, that the anattas become progressively removed from the heart, and then one becomes more pure. And eventually we get to the stage of praying in which there are no anattas. There is no material purification, no material contamination in the heart. There is no obstacle to performing Krishna consciousness. That's essentially what anatta is. It's an obstacle to the practice of Krishna consciousness. And as long as these obstacles are there, it will get in the way of our Krishna consciousness, get in the way of us surrendering to Krishna. So here we see that Dattatreya is explaining to Yadu how to overcome these. You know, he's giving these seven different examples of like with the Karara bird, that you just let go of your attachments. With the young girl. It's an interesting example because the young girl's got bracelets on. You know, these you see in Bengal, these conch bracelets. And anyone who wears these conch bracelets knows that when they're doing things, they make a lot of noise, clank, 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 like that. You know? And it's, like in India, particularly Bengal, you hear it all the time. So, she was concerned that these visitors that came to the house, because her parents and everyone was out today and she was home on her own, but they would think, oh, they're poor people because she's been in the kitchen cooking. So she broke the bracelets and left two on each hand, but still they're clanking, so finally she took them off, so there's only one bracelet on each hand, no noise. And then the lesson that Dr. Trey is saying that we draw from that is that, whenever we are in the association of other people, there is going to be some friction. This is when two things rub together, you rub your hands together, there's friction, there's warmth. So in the same way, when there's two people, especially in Kali Yuga. I was just reflecting on this the other day, when I was coming back from Sydney, on one side, it was interesting, on one side there's this young, I guess mid-20s, early 30s gentleman, and there's no communication whatsoever. He just didn't want to communicate. He was like rigidly in his seat with his arms out like this, like sort of coming into my space, and like just no flexibility there. So I didn't even bother to ask him that. I just put up with it. And then on the other side, there's this woman who's probably mid 30s to 40s, something like that. And she was a businesswoman, and she had a successful career in Deutsche Bank and stuff like that. And I was just, because she was, I didn't ask her, but she was obviously single because she'd been in Australia for a certain amount of time, she was going to Germany soon, and she was like moving around a lot. And generally people in relationships find that very difficult to do. But she was just, off and doing it. And I was reflecting on how in Kali Yuga, the nature of relationships is they're very, generally speaking, very short-lived because there's always friction. And this is just the nature of this age. It's called the age of quarrel. Why? It's because two people can't peacefully coexist. Two people cannot stay in the same place for a short amount of time without having some kind of disagreement, without having some kind of friction. In the material sense, of course, in Krishna consciousness, then there's no disagreement. As long as we have this view that we're serving Krishna, we're cooperating together to serve Krishna, and there's no disagreement. So that then begs the question, why do we have disagreements in this time? I think the answer is pretty straightforward. It's because there is a difference of opinion there, because we don't have this focus of serving Krishna. If we're having some disagreement, it means there's a certain element of my own false ego is becoming involved in this, that I am trying to push across my perception rather than trying to understand what the acharyas are presenting, rather than trying to understand what is the absolute understanding here, what is the point of this, what is Krishna trying to get across. I'm trying to present my own point of view here, therefore there's friction. Because if we're just presenting, if we're just trying to understand the conclusions presented by the acharyas, where is the room for friction? Because the acharyas have already explained all these points, there's nothing new. Just like we see with Srila Prabhupada in his purports, he wasn't coming up with anything new. He was simply echoing the statements that were given by the previous acharyas. And you see that most of the previous acharyas, they do this. They simply echo the statements that were given by the previous acharyas. Now and then they'll introduce some new information, but it's nothing different from what's been given by the previous acharyas. They may present it in a slightly different way. So when we're experiencing friction or confusion or misunderstanding between devotees, we can understand that there's an element of false ego that's coming into that. So this is the interesting example. It's kind of interesting the way that he takes a simple thing like clanging bangles on a woman's wrist and comes up with this profound philosophical understanding. And we see another interesting point is what I read about this morning about the arrow maker. So I don't know if anyone's ever had experience with arrows and bullets and things like that, but if the arrow or the bullet has a slight imperfection in its manufacture, then the thing will not go straight when it's shot. Like if an arrow is curved, the arrow, you know, if the head of the arrow has got a slight curvature in it, then as it sails through the air, it will wander from its path. And also the arrow needs to be very, very pointy, so when it hits the target, it actually penetrates the target. So the arrow maker, understanding this science, obviously because it's arrow maker, was very, very focused on making sure that his arrow was straight and true, and that it was very sharp and pointy, so that when it would go to the target and it would penetrate the target. That's what an arrow is for. Yeah? And he was so absorbed in making his arrow straight and true and pointy that the king passed the road in front of his shop and he didn't notice. Now, traditionally, you know, when the king, it's not like the king was walking down the road on his own. He would have all the fanfare and the people carrying banners and things like that, and there's trumpets and drums and it's just like a jumbo jet flying overhead, and you're so absorbed in this, a jumbo jet flying 200 metres over the temple, you're so absorbed, or one of these, when they have these fighter jets on Australia Day and stuff like that, these flyovers, you're so absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and all these F-18s go screaming over the temple, you don't even notice it. I mean, who does that? I mean, I can't do stuff like that. It's like, I get so absorbed in my service that I don't notice something like that going on. So again, Dattatreya is making the same point. This ekehe kuranandana, like Krishna is making the same point to Arjuna in the Gita, the same point as there earlier on in the Bhagavatam, this ahoituki apatihati, this unmotivated, uninterrupted. Uninterrupted means there's no external distractions. Our service, in order to succeed in devotional service, we need to have this one point of attention. This is my goal here, this is what I'm doing. And we don't get distracted by all the various allurements that are offered by the material nature. There's unlimited allurements. And they come in all shapes and sizes. And they're just presented in such a way just to lure our senses off and be distracted. Material nature is expert. She is so expert. She knows exactly what to present to each and every one of us. And no two persons are exactly the same. There's a slight variation for each individual on what their senses are attracted to, because we have a slight variation in senses. Variations of combinations of the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance. One person, when they're presented with one particular item, will respond the same as somebody else, but when another item is presented the same to, one is repulsed, one is attracted, one's maybe lukewarm, one's really, there's so much variation there. So material nature, Maya Devi is completely aware of the Achilles heel of all the jivas, and she knows how to present the material nature in such a way that would become allured. So this is our business, is to understand that these things are constantly being presented to us to attract our mind, our intelligence, our senses. They're constantly, the material nature, you look at, anywhere you go in the world these days, so much advertising, trying to allure the senses. And not only is the material energy, she's very expert, but these advertising companies are very expert. They know how to appeal to people to allure their senses. Just like I was in the supermarket yesterday buying some celebrants. And I noticed that in Coles they've got this new thing now where they have, I mean, it must cost so much electricity to run these things. It just blows my mind, you know, how wasteful this whole, like marketing idea is. But you go to Coles and they've got these new fridges, and there's all this ice sitting there, and they've got the salad and stuff sitting on ice. And the idea is you go with a little bucket and you make up your own salad. You can pick out all these different things and make up your own salad mix, and they weigh it up and bill you for it. You know, so, and then of course they provide you with a container which is bigger than what you can eat. Because they know that you're going to fill the container up, because the nature of the senses, I want this, I want this, I want this. And you take like that. And I remember years ago, Sridhar Maharaj showing me a video that was put together by marketing people, and showing how, if they sold, they used the example of strawberries, if they sold strawberries by the punnet, usually people would take one punnet, because a punnet is about $3-4 a punnet. Well, that's a lot money, I don't want to spend that much money. What they did is they came up with these baskets, they give you a basket, and they had all the strawberries sitting out, just, loose like that. And what they found is that usually people would, because they just pick out what they thought were all the nice strawberries, and they'd fill the basket up, and usually they'd buy two or three times as many strawberries as what they would. Because why? Because the senses were coming into contact with their objects. Yeah? And in this way the jiva was becoming, overwhelmed by this sensory, engagement. So the same is there with this thing, with the salads now. It's just a marketing ploy to use the uncontrolled senses of the jiva to get them to part with their money. Because they think, oh, I'm going to enjoy more. So I'll get this. Oh, yeah, I like this one too. I'll add this in. But if they just went and bought a pack of the salad mix, they'd just be satisfied with that and move on. But because of the way they're structuring it, just arouses the senses of the jiva. So material nature is like that. Material nature is actively engaged in arousing the senses of the jiva, with the understanding that the more we engage our senses, the more we're on this downward spiral, we're becoming more and more implicated in material life. Krishna points this out in the Gita at the end of the 6th chapter, and he says, Yoginam Sarvasham Bhaktanatma. No, that's not what we're talking about. The 3rd chapter. That if a person doesn't do work as a sacrifice of Vishnu, then they become entangled. Karma bandhana. They become caught up in their activities themselves cause bondage in this material nature. Whereas for a devotee, the same activities, exactly the same activities, in connection with Krishna. This is what yoga means. Yoga means to connect something with Krishna. But this yoga of karma yoga, this is what the 3rd chapter is called, it's karma yoga. And the 5th chapter is karma yoga, action in Krishna consciousness. So karma yoga means to take an activity, whatever activity is you're doing, and use that activity for Krishna. As is pointed out in the 9th chapter, which is yatkaroshi yadasanasi yajanasi yasya. Yatapashati kuntaya tat purusha marapanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away. Whatever austerity you perform, you do that as some putting as an offering to me. And Krishna explains this, Suvasa Vodhaya Mokshakam Badai Sanyasadi Yogi Mukta Vimukta Mokhaisati. He said, with your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, you'll be liberated and thus you'll come to me. Renunciation is that simple. You just, everything you do it for Krishna. That is the way to become free from the workings of the material nature. As long as we're taking these different things for our own enjoyment, there comes division automatically because the other person is doing exactly the same thing. So there's separation, because the center for me is my enjoyment, the center for them is their enjoyment. There's a difference. So this will cause friction. So the idea of the devotee, the path the devotee follows, is sees that the way to success in this material world, the way to peace and happiness in this material world, as Prabhupada explains, that 529 is the peace formula. Why? Because we all have this same perception. We're all seeing that Krishna is the bhakta, he's the enjoyer. Bhakta on the yajnatapasam. The enjoyer of all sacrifices, of penance and austerities. Sarvaloka maheshwaram, he's the proprietor of everything. Usually friction comes, why? Because I'm thinking, I'm the proprietor, I'm the enjoyer. I'm trying to enjoy this, this person is trying to enjoy that, therefore he's my enemy. He's trying to enjoy my property. This is why these things, all these tensions, these frictions, that's why they come about. It's because there's a polarity there. There's one person thinking this is my enjoyment, the other person thinking this is my enjoyment. They fight. They fight over the same thing. Well, what are wars about? You know, one country says, "Oh, this is my property." The other country says, "No, this is our property." They have a war over it. And then Krishna explains that Suddhodana Sarvabhutana, that I am actually the only friend. And also we see these friend, so-called friend relationships in the material world, friends and enemies. So much fighting, so much friction. Oh, he's not my friend anymore? Why? Why am I your friend? What do I do? People get very, you know, agitated by this. Now, why do you speak to me like this? I'm your friend, aren't I? Well, I actually understand that Krishna is the friend. Because why? Because Krishna is the only one who can actually do any good for us. Krishna can change our situation in the material world. No one else can do that. And then Krishna explains, Yapamam Shantim Richiti. Knowing this, one attains peace. So that's the situation. Everyone in this material world is hankering for peace. I don't think we could find anyone who really, you know, maybe they don't want peace for others, maybe they want other people to suffer, but they themselves want peace. They want to enjoy a lasting, peaceful situation. Yet, their very activities bring about a disturbed situation. The activities they're actively pursuing cause them more and more disturbance. You know, like they go and take intoxication because they think this is going to make them happy, this is going to make them peaceful. And they wind up with various types of schizophrenia and all sorts of, you know, mental diseases. And they become so disturbed because of all this intoxication. And it's doing exactly the opposite of what they're thinking they're going to achieve. Rather than giving them a peaceful situation, it increases their disturbance. People become drunk, people become, you know, off their minds on LSD and other various other, you know, psychedelic drugs and psychotropic drugs and this thing, and there's so many different types of intoxication, and they're always coming out with newer and newer types of intoxication. Like they've got this advertising campaign on right now about ice. And we've got no idea what it is, I've never heard of it before, but you know, they're just advertising this stuff called ice, and they're talking about some of the effects that people experience. Now, if it was just that, okay, you take this drug, you're going to become mentally disturbed, who would take it? But they're thinking that I'm going to get so much enjoyment. I'll feel happy, I'll feel high, I'll feel like energized, etc., etc. They're thinking there's so many positive things. And this is the whole allurement of the material world, is they're thinking. They think they've got this impure, this Abhishuddha Buddha, they've got this impure intelligence, and they're thinking they've actually achieved perfection through their endeavors. But they don't understand, because they're of this basic premise, they go back to the first anatta, this first stumbling block they have, is they think they're the body. Therefore, all their activities are based on this miscalculation. Therefore, all the sums are wrong. When everything they add up is wrong, because they have this first basic misunderstanding. They're thinking they're on the body. So Krishna consciousness helps us to overcome this basic anatta in the body, and it comes from detachment, from knowledge and detachment. I remember once having a conversation with a Grihastha devotee, and he was serious. He was telling me that he says detachment is not for Grihasthas. Detachment is for brahmacharis and sannyasis. I was like quite surprised by that conclusion. Particularly when we see that when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was talking about Lord Chaitanya, and he wrote a verse about Lord Chaitanya. He says, Vairagya Vidya Niti Bhakti Yoga Shishakame Kampu Kapurana. Lord Chaitanya came to teach two things, Vairagya Vidya. He came to teach knowledge and detachment. So we have to become detached from all things material. That's what spiritual life is about. Now, because if we're attached to material objects, if we're attached to material enjoyment, if we're attached to the material world, this will again force us to take birth. So if we're all serious about giving up this material body, if we're all serious about developing the love of Godhead and going back onto Godhead, we need to give up all attachment. And every attachment to anything material, we have to give it up. And this is done through this vidya, through knowledge, through understanding that I'm not this body. This is the first, this is the essence of knowledge, is to understand. And it's so important that it's the first instruction a Christian gives in Gita to Arjuna. It's the first thing. And the reason he gives it first is because until you get past that point, you're not going to be able to understand anything else. So until we get past this point, I mean, you know, clearly you have realization or understanding these other things. Until we get past this point of understanding, at least in theory, that I'm not this body, then all these other things will be very, very difficult, because we'll constantly be trying to satisfy the senses. And we see, those who are not practicing devotion, so those who don't accept this philosophy, are constantly trying to satisfy their senses, and they are so agitated by the interaction of the senses with the modes of nature. And they're agitated in different ways. They're agitated in passion, they're agitated in ignorance, they're agitated in goodness, but the fact is, they are agitated. But as soon as they let go of these attachments, just like the hawk, as soon as he let go of the meat, he became peaceful. So as soon as they can let go, the same for us, as soon as we let go of our attachments, if you're feeling agitation, why are you feeling agitated? Because you have an attachment there, you're hanging on to something. And if you let go of that, you become peaceful. It's so simple. Yet, because we're attached, we don't do it. There's one statement Prabhupada made in relation, which I always like to reflect on. He said, this process of Krishna consciousness is so simple. Chanting, dancing, and feasting. Yet still we cannot do it. Why? Because we're holding on to our attachments. So this chapter is very instructive in that regard. It's guiding us on all these different attachments we have, and just saying, just let go of them. Just like the hawk, just let go of the attachments. Just like the, you know, the arrow maker. He's not interested in all these ephemeral attachments. He's just focused on the goal, what his purpose is. That's his attachment. Same with us. What is our attachment? What is our goal here? Our goal is to become God conscious. Our goal is to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just focus on that goal. There's a devotee, a really nice devotee at Bhaktivedanta Manor. Her name is Mother Kalamara. And she makes milk sweets there. Hopefully when I come back from Europe, I'll be able to bring some milk sweets with me so you can all try them out. They're amazing milk sweets. And her goal is to make milk sweets that attract Krishna. That's her goal. And she's so focused on that goal, she enlists the help of so many other devotees to try to make the perfect milk sweet that attracts Krishna. And she makes amazing milk sweets. They're so tasty, they're so flavoursome, they're so beautiful to look at, they're decorated. She has them paint tulsi leaves and roses and peacocks and all types of things on the sandesh, and the burpees are like this big and they're, you know, an inch thick and rich and creamy. And, you know. Her whole goal is just to attract Krishna. We see Mother Yasoda, you know, when she's churning butter, she puts all different types of herbs and things in the butter. Her goal is to make the butter so tasty that Krishna will not think of going to the houses of the other gopis to steal butter. Because why? She's thinking that Krishna goes to these other houses because the butter she makes is not tasty. She's thinking that the butter in those other houses are tasty. So her whole focus when she's making the butter is simply to attract Krishna. So you see, they have this one point of determination. So that if we want to be successful in devotional service, we also need to develop that one point of determination, this ekehe kuranandana. So this chapter here is discussing, we've got to give up these attachments, become detached from everything material, and become attached to everything spiritual. Become attached to everything related to Krishna. And this will propel us along the path back to Godhead. Okay, thank you very much for listening. Any questions at all?
I read some letters to Srila Prabhupada. If devotees are disagreeing how to best serve Krishna, that's not material.
What is the issue?
Prabhu was saying he was reading some letters where the Prabhupada was writing about devotees were disagreeing on how best to serve Krishna.
He's saying that's not a material.
Obviously there's a spiritual motivation, and obviously they're taking the right path because they're consulting the acharya. to understand. But the fact that they're having a disagreement would indicate that, you know, they want to serve Krishna, but there's a bit of baggage there. They have their material understandings. But at least they're taking the right path because they're consulting with an acharya to find out what is the best process. And no doubt Prabhupada, you know, in many cases, he would encourage both ways. He would encourage I was reading Korma's diary this morning. And in there, he was talking about Melbourne, actually, because I was looking for information about when Jagannath Balaji Subhadra were installed. And from what I can figure out, from what I can find, there was no actual installation. They were made in 1972, probably April, May 1972, in preparation for the first Rath Yatra by Deepak and Dwapayan. Dwapayan is still in Sydney. And they used to have a preaching centre in Little, it was like Little Burke or Little Collins, anyhow, so these were made there. But anyhow, there's some that I was reading on about the Rath Yatra and how they perform many different things to make the Rath Yatra. They also have done some dramas, and then a few days after the Rath Yatra, Mother Vishnu, who had received a letter from Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was basically explaining we're not interested in these material dramas. We're only interested in things that promote the cause of Krishna consciousness. You know, so he was saying, you do things that are discussing topics, you know, do dramas that are based around, you know, things like teachings of Lord Chaitanya, he was the example he gave, or have kirtan. So, you know, like, basically Prabhupada's instructions are that anything that's connected to Krishna, directly connected, you know, like, obviously sometimes we can come up with very, very obscure connections. You know, but then it's so obscure that most people can't get the connection. You know, we just do it to attract people, you know. But no, we the idea is to get people thinking about Krishna, to get people talking about Krishna, to get people chanting the holy name. So it needs to be a direct connection, not just something very, very obscure. You know, so in that instance, you see that, you know, if the devotees' ideas were along the vein of Krishna consciousness, then Prabhupada would have encouraged it. But if they had some idea that was not directly, you know, furthering the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement, then no doubt Prabhupada would have not encouraged that. But, you know, there will be differences as long as we don't follow the path that's given by the Mahajans. But even sometimes we see that, you know, there are different, as I was mentioned in the beginning, different acharyas will present different ways of doing the same thing or different understandings of the same thing. But generally for younger devotees and neophyte devotees, we understand that the differences are becoming because of, are coming about because of my material attachments.
Probably Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita that do things as a matter of duty and give the results to me.
Yeah.
So when we are doing any activities, whether it's for our family or friends or whoever, we still get a little bit of attachment in it, which is a distraction from Krishna. So how to overcome that? Although we're doing it as a matter of duty.
Well, see, the thing is, Krishna says in the Gita, you know, you perform your duty for me. So meat eating, intoxication, gambling, these things don't fit into duty. This is, you know, impious activity. So we have to understand first what is our duty. Our duty as a servant of Krishna is to propagate God consciousness. So if we're always engaged in that, you know, even when we're interacting with our family members, etc., if we're always acting as a devotee of Krishna, then there's less likelihood we're going to become attached. Because we'll see the connection with Krishna. But as soon as you start doing things that aren't, you know, the mind becomes like unsteady because of our attachment to material things. So the more we become attached to these material things, the more we become irresolute in our practice of Krishna consciousness. But the more resolute we are in the practice of Krishna consciousness, the more detached we become from these things. Do you see? If you're becoming, you know, affected, that means you're not resolute in your Krishna consciousness. But if you're resolute in your Krishna consciousness, you don't become affected. So the idea is to see, to when I'm interacting with my family. Now obviously when you're dealing with your parents, in most circumstances the parents just do not want to hear the philosophy of Krishna consciousness from their children. Because why? Because you're my children, what do you know? I taught you everything you know. This is why they approach me. What can you tell me? I taught you everything. Yeah? So, you know, when I first joined ISKCON, I used to preach to my mother. I just gave up because it was sort of a waste of time. And then, so then I just went about, you know, trying to be a devotee. Trying to, when I was around her, act as a devotee. And in the end, not long before she left the body, my mother said, actually, you're the only one of my sons who's turned out any good. Yeah? And I wasn't preaching to her. Yeah? And I know with other verses, like with Indradrimma Swami, he used to send his mother's books all the time, but he never preached to her, he just sent her books as presents. And then when it came around when she was leaving her body, she started to read the books. And then, you know, she was speaking to Indradrimma Maharaj on the phone, and she was starting to preach to him about the futility of the body and how we have to give up the, you know, so his actions, even though he wasn't like directly, you know, oh mum, you're in Maya, you've got to become God conscious, you've got to chant Hare Krishna, things like that. His actions of maintaining and presenting himself as a devotee of Krishna bore fruit. So the point I'm making here is we always need to understand primarily what is our duty. And our duty is to become a devotee of Krishna and to give the example. First your behavior becomes ideal, then you can preach. And by having ideal behavior, that in itself is very, very effective and powerful preaching. So we don't need to try to convert the world. You know? And many of us in our present situation don't really have the capacity. But the first thing we need to do is convert ourselves. So if we're focused on our duty, which is to be servants of Krishna, then we won't become affected by these things. But if we're not focused on our duty, so if you're becoming affected, we can understand. I'm not following my duty properly. Peter?
I was just thinking in that regard, if we give up the idea that I'm controlling, yeah. I'm the controller, and let Krishna do his work, then he can do what he needs to. But, for when you're attached, it's really hard to give up that identification with the body. And also, I have another comment that Lord Shambhu teaches that one should not be attached to the process of liberation itself as well.
Yeah.
So, it's like, you know, it's like attached but not attached, simply.
No, become attached to all things spiritual, become detached from all things material. It's the same way of saying the different thing. I mean, it's a different way of saying the same thing.
It's like,
you know, the cup's half full, the cup's half empty. Same phenomena is being observed. But, you know, like, you become detached from material, you automatically become attached to spiritual. Assuming you're following the devotional path. You know, I mean, some materialistic people that become detached from material things just become cynical. But as spiritualists, they become detached from all this material, and they become attached to all these spiritual. It's the same thing. Automatic. Okay, thank you very much.